The fraudsters are not some individual in a garage. These are organized crime entities. The individuals doing it are very well prepared, very well equipped.
Hello and welcome to Speaking of Security, the call authentication and voice security podcast from Secure Logix. Today's subject is contact centers, why they are important to business, various security risks and threats they face, and reasons financial contact centers in particular have a growing need for strong authentication. For this episode, we had SecureLogix CMO David Hurd sit down with SecureLogix CTO Mark Collier as they examined this important topic. Guys, take it away.
Hey, Mark. Welcome to the podcast. It's great having you.
Hey, David. Good to be here.
It's good to see you in person. I know you've been traveling a lot speaking on this very topic.
Yeah, quite a bit, but that's good because there's nothing like being out talking to actual customers and prospects for this.
Well, it's great. It's great having you, and let's get to it. Contact centers are still very relevant in today's business world, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. You know, contact centers are one place where voice systems are still extremely important. Financial services, banks, insurance, retirement, et cetera, still make heavy use with contact centers, you know.
In fact, it's the role that contact centers still play in business that's part of the reason that there's incentives to attack contact centers today, is there not?
That's right. More and more people are using mobile for different financial transactions, but there's still a very large group of individuals, consumers, customers that use contact centers, especially when they're dealing with a more significant transaction. So they might do something very simple on their mobile device, but if they're going to really move money around, a lot of customers and consumers still want to call a bank and actually talk to an agent.
So let's talk about some of those specific security risks before we move on to authentication. What risks and attacks should contact center managers be concerned with? What should they be looking out for?
Really, the biggest issue in a financial contact center, of course, there's other contact centers like 911, but specific to financial, really the big risk is financial fraud, also known as account takeover. So somebody might have information about David Hurd. Maybe they have your number. They have some of your personal information. And they'll dial in. They'll impersonate you. And then they'll try to steal money out of your account. You have other issues like call pumping. You have telephony denial of service. But really the big issue, the number one issue, is financial fraud.
So in addition, because fraud impacts the customers of the bank and indeed or the financial institution as an example, but also, if I'm the contact center manager, you mentioned TDoS, telephony denial of service. I guess there's some security risk with regard to just keeping my resources, keeping my line of communication up, my ability to transact with customers available that can be at risk over today's networks. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, contact centers are a portion of the overall voice network that's still critical. So TDoS that might affect or create disruption, prevent availability to customers, financial fraud, and some other issues are really what you need to think about in a financial contact center.
Okay, great. Well, if impersonation frauds and schemes and those types of risks are primary, then it seems that the ability to disguise who you are in a call transaction is important. I guess the industry term around that is spoofing. What role does spoofing play in all this, and how tough is it to solve as an issue?
Yeah, really what contact center managers are trying to do is to authenticate the caller. And the reason they do that is that the caller, it's almost impossible to tell who the caller is based on the calling number and other information. It's very easy to spoof that number. It's also very easy to disguise your voice and use other techniques to make it very difficult to detect who that person really is. Is it really David Hurd calling in, or is it some individual mimicking David, you know, doing some sort of impersonation scam to try to steal money? And spoofing is just one technique. You know, they could spoof the number. They could grab a VoIP number. Again, they can manipulate audio. There's all sorts of different things that they can do.
So what are some of the benefits to authentication inside a contact center? I guess, you know, there's various solutions out there. They cost different amounts. They take different approaches. It's an interesting dynamic market. At a base level, what does authentication get you? I assume there's security, there's fraud protection, but there's other benefits as well, correct?
Yeah, right now the primary approach to authentication is what's called knowledge-based authentication, or KBA. And everybody's familiar with that. That's when you call in and they ask you what's your social security number, date of birth, mother's maiden name, some other goofy question. And there's a number of problems with that. One, it takes time. It might take an agent 30 seconds or 45 seconds to ask those questions, and that costs a lot of money. Customers hate it, especially if they have to go through it multiple times. And it's very ineffective because the bad guys probably have that information just as well as you do because they pull it off of social media, they call you, they buy data from a major breach like Equifax, et cetera. So KBA is the traditional way of doing that. And nowadays, there's additional technology available that does a much better job of authentication.
You know, some other benefits that come to mind, maybe you could talk about, what does authentication do in terms of just even the experience within the contact center, whether it's call processing times, the experience of the caller end-to-end via transfers, and the overall cost management footprint for the manager?
So to kind of dive into what I said, let's say you can strongly authenticate that it really is David Hurd, and you can do that really quickly. Well, A, if you can do that, that might shave 30 to 45 seconds off of the call. And if you look at a really big bank that might do 1 billion calls a year, or maybe 250 million go to an agent, if you can shave 30 seconds of time off of 250 million calls, that's a very significant operational savings to the bank. Again, if the customers use that and there's not some sort of enrollment or some other clunky way of using the authentication, they're much happier because it's seamless. And lastly, it does have an impact on fraud because if you can strongly authenticate some percentage of callers, then it lets you perhaps focus on the non-authenticated caller for more detailed fraud analysis. So it's really three things: operational efficiency, customer experience, and potentially helping with fraud.
Wonderful. And some cost management and potential savings there as well, I would assume. So it also seems like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, the risk is increasing, or the need for strong authentication over time, not decreasing. I mean, you know, at a consumer level, we're all experiencing now spoofed calls coming across our cell phones. And, you know, it's at the very consumer level, we're dealing with these types of impersonation issues. What's your sense of the risk level and where it's trending?
The risk level is increasing for several reasons. One, the fraudsters are not some individual in a garage. These are organized crime entities, perhaps in another country. They're in boiler rooms. They have they're very well equipped. Their scripts for doing account takeover are very well defined. So the individuals doing it are very well prepared, very well equipped. The other reason is that, again, when you talk about knowledge-based authentication, the basic information that a bad guy has to have to take over your account is well known. Again, they can pull it off the internet, they can pull it off of social media, they can buy it. And to repeat something I said earlier, you know, major breaches like Equifax, you know, why did somebody steal all that information? Well, they stole it so that they can sell it to somebody else for some reason. So in that case, they had millions and millions of records of information of that exact personal info that they need to give somebody so they can answer those questions. So the threat is elevating, and the effectiveness of knowledge-based authentication is getting weaker and weaker for those reasons.
So let's turn to some discussions about the solutions and what can be done. You're the chief technology officer at SecureLogix. You also lead a lot of research around spoofing detection and authentication solutions. Talk about the unique approach that you're building via SecureLogix.
Yes, so a couple of things. One, there's no one way to authenticate a caller. Really what we're trying to focus on is that most users nowadays have a mobile phone. They take that mobile phone around with them everywhere they go. They've got a landline phone or whatever. So we're very focused on identifying that when we see a call and the number is David Hurd's number, I won't give your number here on the podcast, but when that number shows up, there are a number of techniques to confirm that the call coming from that number really is coming from David Hurd's phone. There is no one way to do that. And it may vary between a mobile phone, a landline, a business phone. It may vary by service provider. It may be different for mobile versus VoIP or whatever. So there's no one way to do it. So what we do is we have a cloud service. It's essential to have it in the cloud because it's constantly changing. And we use a variety of techniques based on what the customer is trying to do, the threat of the call. In other words, maybe it's a high-value transaction, so we'll do one thing. It's a low-value transaction, we'll do something else. It's a mobile call, it's a landline, whatever. And then we use a variety of techniques to authenticate that it really is that individual calling. And one last point about that, that industry, you know, those techniques are changing constantly. So that's another reason why we're combining a lot of different techniques. There is no one size fits all. And right now you have a number of different techniques, for example, to how to authenticate a mobile call. Well, a customer is probably going to use the one that is the most cost effective. So if I have three different ways of doing that, one costs 5 cents, one costs 1 cent, they're all just as good. Which one do you think the customer wants to do? So we're orchestrating that process. We're building some of our own technology, putting in the cloud, orchestrating it, and also working with certain vendors like Trusted, who has a very strong authentication technique that we use in certain instances.
This is really an approach that it sounds like is a risk-based scoring for calls coming in and screening for security issues on the front end, but then the orchestration of maybe your fastest, best, optimal authentication decision from that point forward. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And another point is that we want to do this authentication as good as possible, you know, appropriate in terms of the threat, the risk, speed. And we also want to do it very early in the call flows. And the advantage to that, instead of waiting deep into the call and doing audio analysis and voice bio and other things like that that have traditionally been done, is that if you figure this out early, you can also affect what happens in the IVR. You know, remember that in a typical bank, 80 or so percent of people never leave the IVR. And they only talk to an agent when they want to make a complex transaction. So if you can do this authentication early, you have the other benefit of what's called IVR containment, which means the more people you can keep in the IVR and who don't actually talk to an agent, then that's much better for the bank. It saves the bank money. So if you can authenticate them early and cheaply and keep them in the IVR, that's a big operational benefit to the bank.
So it sounds like you get security through this solution and approach. You get risk scoring for all the calls. You're able to authenticate a broader range of the calls coming in, but at an overall lower price because the orchestration is deciding the best pathway with regard to cost and strength of authentication call per call.
That's right. You want to authenticate the broadest number of calls, and you also want to do it in a way that is most cost effective.
Very good. You know, I know some of the solution, actually quite a bit of it, is really being pioneered through research that you're doing, funded through contracts with the Department of Homeland Security, the Science and Technology Directorate there. Can you talk about some of the projects, the research projects through DHS and its applicability to this area of authentication?
Yeah, absolutely. So SecureLogix has been doing development and research in this area of voice security for many, many years. One of the things that we've been able to do most recently for about 2 years now is work with the government, specifically, as you said, David, the DHS, the Science and Technology Directorate, Cybersecurity Division. And what they do is they take requirements from industry, from DHS itself, from civilian government, really everybody but the DOD and the intelligence community. They take these requirements and then they fund universities and businesses like ourselves to make near-term research investments in these areas. So they're interesting in the sense that they're looking at investing in research that has an operational benefit in like a 2-year window, which is exactly what SecureLogix wants to do. So say, for example, I'll give you an example. So they become concerned about the issue of spoofing and lack of authentication because it affects consumers. You have the sinister impersonation scams coming into DHS itself. You have the issue we've been talking about in banks. So they funded us to invest in detecting spoofing, in better authenticating the calling number like I've talked about, and also to detect impersonation scams, which in a bank means account takeover. For a consumer, it might mean an IRS or an IT scam. That's not really a focus, but that's one area. Or it might be, again, a really sinister call coming into a part of DHS or the State Department or some civilian government organization where, you know, instead of trying to use an email to get information, they're making a call. So we're doing some other stuff with them in the area of telephony denial of service, but the area that we're focusing on going forward is sort of that call our core. How do you detect spoofing? How do you authenticate the caller? And how do you use that for things like impersonation scams? And the only other thing I'd like to mention about what we're doing with them is that we're focused on addressing those issues in the same financial contact centers and also 911, because that's another type of contact center where it's really critical to be able to know the good from the bad calls and prevent things like TDoS and other disruptive events from crowding out legitimate callers, which can have an actual life-threatening impact.
It sounds like, you know, the range of issues here span national security when you're talking about 911 emergency call responses all the way to business protection and consumer protection. So, you know, I think the fact that the DHS is funding this research speaks pretty broadly and powerfully to the weight that they give these threats to business and to consumers.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We're working to expand our research program to work with other government organizations. But I have to give a plug to this group at DHS. They're really fantastic to work with. And, you know, their focus, again, on doing near-term research and pressing that concept of transition, getting it out to the field, is really, it's really refreshing, and it's perfectly aligned with what we want to do. I like to describe this group at DHS as sort of a venture capitalist type of organization that provides research money that, you know, increases the velocity of our program, but doesn't result in equity loss and other things that you have with traditional funding.
Absolutely. Well, I think this has been a great discussion, this focus on contact centers, and I hope the listeners have enjoyed it and found it informative. And Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you bet. Thanks a lot, David.
That's it for another episode of Speaking of Security, the call authentication and voice security podcast from SecureLogix. Thank you, David Hurd, SecureLogix CMO, for leading today's discussion. And thank you, Mark Collier, SecureLogix CTO, for walking us through some of the ins and outs of contact center security. This podcast was produced by Lightning Jar and brought to you by SecureLogix, the world leader in call authentication and security, protecting contact centers, businesses, and a wide range of government, municipal, and private voice networks from cyber threats, including TDoS attacks, fraud, robocalls, and other abuse. You can find them online at SecureLogix.com, that's logic spelled L-O-G-I-X, or speak directly to one of their voice security experts by calling 210-402-9669. Again, that's 210-402-9669. Tune in again next month for another episode of Speaking of Security as we continue to explore topics related to call authentication and voice security in a world where voice networks are increasingly under attack.